top of the key. Islet with it again. Skip pass near corner for Beisner. Bryce back to Gerstner. Deep three. 3 feet behind the line, and he buries another one. The third three of the game for Noah Gerstner. It's 39-12 Trojans.
And the Blood Boys cruised their victory last night over Minneapolis. It wasn't pretty. Low-scoring game, 47-14. Minneapolis packed in their zone, and I think they did the right thing. Their best chance to beat Beloit was hopefully Beloit missing from the outside, which Beloit was just 5 of 20 from 3. But Noah hit 3 threes, a couple early, and then Minneapolis just has a hard time scoring the ball. They slowed down the pace. That was their best chance to win. Pack it in, absolutely, slow down the pace. And John Darrow's a very smart coach, and he knew that was the only way they were going to have a chance at winning. But they just have a heck of a time scoring the basketball throughout the year. And they're a young team as well. So Beloit boys win last night 47-14. Bryce had 17, Beisner, that is, and Noah Gershon had 15 and 3 threes. And Beloit will get ready for the next round. Anything else you want to add about the game last night? Awards, you can go through that.
Yeah, I can go through that. I do want to say, like, you talked about Coach Darrow being a very good coach. One of the things, I've done all three of these Beloit-Minneapolis games this year. One of the things I do like about Minneapolis is they don't quit, right? Like, mm-hmm. they give effort the whole time out. They just don't have guys that can make buckets. Mm-hmm. Owen Just is the only one. He had 10 of 14 last night for Minneapolis, and so he's the one that's providing the offense for him. But just a kind of a normal type of game there that you want to have, just get the win and move on. The defense was outstanding though too, and that when you can't make buckets, it's going to be mm-hmm. even more difficult when you're going up against a defense like that. So athletes of the game were Beisner and Gerstner that you mentioned with the 17 and 15 each, and then Beisner got the block of the game from H&R Block and Beloit, and the connects of the game, Cunningham Telephone and Cable, was the three-pointer that you heard at the start of the sports ticket here from Gerstner, and then the utility player of the game from Syncon of Kansas was Quinn Eilert. So a workmanlike effort there, 47-14 win, and you move on to the semis to play Silver Lake coming up on Thursday.
Wasn't their best performance, but it doesn't need to be.
Absolutely not.
You want to
just win and move on.
You want to save them. And if you think that game was a little bit ugly, Nemaha Central beat Marysville last night 37-31 in a boys' first-round game in that sub-state. Nemaha Central only had three players score in the game. Abe Hilbert, who we know very well, he played with Noah during travel ball. He had 21 of the 37. Marysville had only four players score. They scored 31, and one of their best players scored 20. So two kids combined to score 41. The rest of the two teams scored 27 between all of them. So that was not a pretty game from what it sounds like. Yeah. Rossville beat Riley County 50-37, lower scoring game there. And then Silver Lake beat St. Mary's 67-55. St. Mary's beat them twice during the regular season, but Silver Lake wins the most important one to move on. Beloit will play Silver Lake for the first time in boys basketball. I looked this up today. I knew it from my memory, but I double-checked it. Mm-hmm. It's the first time since 2013 that Beloit and Silver Lake will play in boys basketball, and that was the first round of the state tournament mm-hmm. in Hutchinson, where Beloit should have won. They were the favorite. They just did not play well. Silver Lake beat them 52-50, and Beloit had no business losing that game. But they just did. They just had a night where their best players didn't play so well. They struggled a little bit. They got behind. Silver Lake kind of controlled the tempo. It looks like Silver Lake boys like to get up and down. They score quite a few points, but they also give up quite a few, too. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see what Beloit and Silver Lake, what that boys game will be like coming up on Thursday at 6 o'clock, which we'll have for you on Katie Cutch 94 and KatieCutcher94.com. And of course, Silver Lake beat Beloit in the 3A state title in 2013, 82-38. So I know that's a long time ago, 11 years ago, but that's the last time Beloit met Silver Lake in football, or they met them in boys basketball. Now, the Beloit girls, if they would win tonight, will probably move on. And if they win, they would play probably Silver Lake in a mm-hmm. girls matchup. Now, Beloit, Silver Lake have met at state in volleyball a few times before.
Softball too.
And softball as well. Yep. So there are a little bit of crossing over, usually only at state, but this year it's kind of a unique situation. Usually Beloit goes out west. They would be with like the Nortons and Phillipsburgs of the world. This year they're going east, and so they see some different people, which that might be a good thing. And so Silver Lake winning last night, and Beloit will take them on. Silver Lake's 13-7, but they're a solid team. They beat Rock Creek, who's one of the better teams in 4A. They split with them, but beat them recently. So Silver Lake is certainly a capable team. And then the Hoisington Sub-State, Ellsworth winning 61-20. They'll take on Lyons, who has a losing record in the semis. And then Southeast Saline Boys Sub-State. Southeast got to play Heston again. They avoided them last year in Sub-State, but a few years prior to that, they kept meeting Heston. Heston, of course, the three-time defending champion. Southeast Saline Heston in the semifinals. as they beat Council Grove last night, 72-57. You want to talk about the 2A girls?
Yeah, the Oakley Substate Smith Center opened out with a 53-22 win over Hill City. Expected to win that. They were up big all the way through and got the victory and moved on to face TMP in the semis. TMP beat Oakley, who's actually seated higher than them, but TMP went at 50-44 in Oakley there. TMP really handled Smith Center earlier this season, so an interesting semifinal matchup coming up there on Thursday. And then at the Waubonsie Substate, did not go well for the two teams that would be, quote-unquote, well, I guess there's one that did go well for Sacred Heart beat Lincoln 65-12, and Republic County saw their season come to a close of 54-19 loss to Valley Heights. So those are the Waubonsie Substate results in all of the brackets for all these substates can be found at ncksports.com if you want to look in deeper to them.
Sacred Heart was up 30-0 at halftime,
yes,
of that game. All right, tonight we have one game for you on the radio, and then we'll have games on both stations coming up on Thursday and Friday and hopefully Saturday, as well as 1A substates will resume coming up on Thursday and Friday. We'll go through that broadcast schedule here in a moment. Tonight we have the Beloit Lady Trojans on the road at Minneapolis in the rubber match of the season. Both teams went 15-5 in the regular season. Beloit won a share of the league title. Minneapolis was just a game behind. Minneapolis won the coin flip. They're the 4 seed. They get the game at home. Beloit is the road team as the 5 seed. The two teams split the regular season series, both winning on the other team's home floor. Beloit won 35-28 at Minneapolis, and then the Lady Lions returned the favor, winning 38-37 in Beloit 11 days ago when they ended the game on a 12-1 run, and Beloit led by 10 with 5:20 to go, but didn't make a shot the rest of the game from the floor. Minneapolis has a monkey to get off their back. The Minneapolis girls have lost 8 straight first-round sub-state games, with their last sub-state win coming in 2015. They have lost their last 2 sub-state first-round games at home when they've been the higher seed. Last year, they were a 3 seed and lost at home. And so that's where they're going to be, though, tonight, is at home. So maybe Beloit's like, this is okay to be on the road. And they're hoping Minneapolis, that the third time's a charm here, third year in a row that they're hosting a first-round game. And this is the third matchup of the season between Beloit and Minneapolis. And here's Sean Remus on that third meeting.
We've had them down both games, and we just need to find a way to finish the game and not let them get back in it, and then continue to do what we do offensively. And then on the defensive end, you know, keep them out of the lane again and keep their shooters under control. But, you know, I like our chances, and our team's playing really well right now, and, you know, they're excited about the opportunities.
Well, it should be an interesting battle. It's always a grinder. It's kind of, I don't want to say ugly up the game, but, you know, Minneapolis is very good at playing solid, tenacious defense. They'll press you. They will scrap. They'll claw, you know, and that's proven when they were down 10 with 5 minutes to go. The last time they played 11 days ago, came back to win on the road, which allowed them to get this home game in the first round of sub-state, and it cost Beloit an outright league title. But this is, you know, Coach Remus told me, and she told you as well, that, you know, after that second one, well, the bigger one is the third one. This is the most important of the three we've played, because this is, you win, you move on, you lose, you're done, and that's it for your seniors and everything else. And so this will be an interesting matchup tonight. I'll have the call for you from Minneapolis, 6:45 pregame, Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com. Get the free Katy Country 94 on your smartphones, and also you can watch it live video stream, ncksports.com, by the Beloit Trojan channel. And elsewhere in that substate, Riley County, it's number 8 Marysville at number 1 Silver Lake. Marysville, the 8 seed, and they have a 500 record. Everybody else has a winning record in that substate. Number 7, St. Mary's, is at number 2, Nemaw Central. And that's not an easy layup there for Nemaw Central at all. Number 6, Riley County, is at number 3, Rossville. They know each other very well, so that's an interesting matchup. 4A girls tonight, you got Pratt at Concordia in first round action. And then 2A boys substate tonight, Dusty.
Yeah, 2A boys Smith Center has a first-round home game for the first time since 2011. Is there the number 3 seed hosting number 6 seed Oakley at 6 o'clock, and then Waubonsie Substate, Valley Heights, number 6 seed, is at 3 seed Lincoln at 6 o'clock. So those are the immediate area teams that are on the court tonight in 2A boys. Again, full brackets, ncksports.com.
We'll go through our schedule here. We'll start wrestling locker room chats today, the final edition.
Yeah, we'll talk with the head coaches of Beloit, Osborne, and Smith Center here this evening to recap state wrestling over the weekend, and look forward to what's coming next for the wrestling programs in the area. 5:15 tonight on Katy Country 94 and kittycountry94.com. Wrestling Locker Room Chats.
All right. As we mentioned, Beloit at Minneapolis Girls tonight, 6:45 pregame. Tip off at 7 on Kitty Country 94 in the live video stream. And then tomorrow we'll have our, tomorrow on Thursday, we'll have our final basketball locker room chats.
Yeah, basketball tomorrow. We talk with coaches of Beloit, Osborne, Smith Center, and Thunder Ridge. And then on Thursday, we'll chat with the coaches from St. John's, Tipton, Lakeside, and Rock Hills, beginning around 5:15 each night as well.
All right. Thursday, we'll have the Beloit boys against Silver Lake on Katy Country 94. You'll have a doubleheader on Thursday for Mankato.
Yeah, the first game will be Frankfort-Osborne boys there at 6. We'll come in right after our locker room chats. We'll pregame there on Thursday. And then
you won't have to locker room. You'll be on Z, so you won't have to come in after locker room chats.
Never mind.
That's okay.
Obviously, like all the things going on. Yeah, we got Frankfort-Osborne on Z at pregame 5:50, tip-off 6 o'clock. And then following game will be Clifton-Clyde-Rock Hills boys there in Mankato on Thursday.
And then Friday, we hope to have the Beloit girls continuing on. If they win tonight, they'll be on Katy Country 94 on Friday, and then you'll have one girls game on Z.
Osborne, Clifton, Clyde girls, looking forward to that one, and that'll be the early game as well. Pregame at 5:50 there for that one. Tip off at 6, so and then we'll see what happens on Saturday, right?
That's exactly right. We hope to have games on both of our stations. The Sports Ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Back in 30 seconds with K-State's overtime win that should have never been an overtime win.
I'm Elijah at Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Did you know that we sell tires? We also perform alignments and all the other services that go along with them. We handle all the top brands. Extras like road hazard warranty, complimentary tire rotations, and complimentary tire repairs are available for purchase on most tires. Right now, we are offering $80 off when you buy a set of 4. Call or stop by Kiefer Brothers Automotive for fast, friendly tire services today. Find us just south of the courthouse in Beloit or on the web at KieferBrothers.com.
Gasson back to Perry. Shot clock is at 10. Here's Tyler on the drive. Layup good. What a play, Tyler Perry. He's got 25, and it's 89-85.
Well, this is pretty simple. K-State needs to play every game in overtime. And if it is they have the ball, final possession, just go ahead and don't even try to score. Just go ahead and make sure that you don't give the other team the last shot, some kind of heave from full court, and you win in overtime. K-State last night winning that layup by Tyler Perry. He went 4-for-4 from the line down the stretch. He had 29 points, 9 in overtime. K-State escapes, and I mean escapes, with a 94-90 overtime win over West Virginia last night in Manhattan. Wildcats are up 22 at halftime. They led by 25, 63-38, with 13:39 to play. And somehow, which was trailing late in regulation by 2. But Perry made 2 free throws with 15 seconds left to tie, and then not a good final possession at all for West Virginia there at the end of regulation. So we went to overtime, and then K-State, of course, is automatic in overtime. More on that in a moment. Perry with 29, Cam Carter 19, K-State 17-11, 7-8 in the Big 12. They were 15-31 from three-point land. Raekwon Battle with 28, and Carissa added 25 for West Virginia as they combined to make 11 threes. And I tell you, Josh Eilert, of course, Osborne native, and he was back at his alma mater at Kansas State, first time as a head coach. And that says a lot, I think, about him and his team when they are 9-18, they're down 25 on the road with 13:39 to play. And I'll tell you what, 9 out of 10 teams that I see over the years covering sports and watching sports just flat out don't make a run and just kind of accept that they're going to get their butt kicked, and they, I don't know if they want to roll over, but they don't exactly give it their best, and it's kind of like go through the motions and get the heck out of Dodge. I think that says a lot about the coaching staff and those players for West Virginia to come all the way back from down 25 to actually lead, and it sucks for them to make that unbelievable comeback and ended up losing anyway in overtime. But I think that says a lot about the coaching staff and the kids that he has. He's been shorthanded a lot this year at different times. Of course, a tough situation Josh Eilert inherited. And so they are 9-19, 4-11 in the Big 12. K-State now 12-0 in overtime games under Jerome Tang, 7-0 this season, 6-0 at Bramlage. It's the 12th consecutive overtime win for Kansas State. It's their Division I record 7th this season, as they do win in front of 8,800 fans at Bramlage. The 7 overtime wins are now the Division I single-season record, snapping a tie of 6 with Wake Forest back in the 80s and Chattanooga in the 80s and Lafayette in 2007 and 8. The current 12-game overtime winning streak is the second longest nationally behind Florida State, which has won 14 in a row dating back to 2018. So K-State actually doesn't have the longest overtime winning streak currently, which is interesting. I would have figured they would have. First of all, let's hear from Josh Eilert reflecting on his return to his alma mater as a head coach. His team nearly pulled off a shocking comeback win.
I didn't have a lot of time to think about it. You know, I was surrounded by family and friends the last couple of days. You know, we came in on Saturday night, and it's always a great opportunity to get to see so many of my family that I don't get a lot of time to spend with. So, you know, I spent a lot of time sharing stories and catching up with people. And, but, no, I mean, it was you walk out on that floor and you think back to the time you had here, and you know, I was a walk-on here at Kansas State, and I did it for the love of the game. I wanted to scratch that itch. I wanted to continue with the game of basketball one way or another. I didn't know where it was going to take me, but I wasn't the most talented guy by any means. But I wanted to continue to scratch that itch and play that game, and you love something that loves you back, and case in point where I'm at right now, I've continued to love the game and be passionate about it, and it's got me to a position where I'm trying to take advantage of a great opportunity that I didn't, you know, foresee happening this way.
Yeah, well said. Josh Eilert and his team gave it their all last night, and what a comeback, down 25, actually led at one point late in the game, but they fall to K-State in overtime, 94-90. Kansas State avoided a really a bad defeat for them at home, would have maybe crushed their hopes of making NCAA tournament, although those hopes seem to be slim, but they are there. Here is Jerome Tang on the reasons for the second half comeback from West Virginia.
They shot 50%, 69% from three, whereas in the first half, they were 16% from three and 33% from two. So credit goes to West Virginia. There was a time there where I thought we were playing not to lose, and we got a little tight. And, you know, whether it was my play calls or, you know, just our demeanor in the huddles, you know, I'll have to look at all of that. But thankful we got it to overtime, and I like the look in their eyes. When the buzzer sounded, we knew we were going to overtime. I was looking at guys that knew they were going to win.
Yeah, Coach Tang also said after the game, they asked about, there was empty seats there. There was 8,800 people, so not a bad crowd, but certainly some empty seats. And he was like, you know, we need our fans out there. We need their help, you know, in the future home games that they have. So K-State does win and survives. Baylor wins over TCU 62-54. They're 9-6 in conference play. Tonight, Big 12 play, number 7 Kansas hosts BYU. Jayhawks are 21-6, 9-5 in the Big 12 after their big win over Texas on Saturday. No Kevin McCullough again tonight. BYU, of course, losing to K-State in Manhattan on Saturday. And interestingly enough, they flew back and then came back to Kansas for the game.
Yeah, that is interesting.
I thought they would have stayed.
Yeah.
Bill Self on BYU's offense. They like to shoot threes.
They're going to shoot a lot of threes. Like the other day, we made three threes and played really well. You know, if they make 13 threes, they've already outscored you 30 points from the field if we were to make threes. So it's actually a good style of play. You got five guys with their starters that can all shoot threes, and then you've got four guys always in the game that can shoot threes, even when they go to the bench. And we're going to have to do some things differently, because I still believe in my heart we still defend from the inside out. And this is a game we need to defend from the outside in.
Yeah, that is very true. KU and BYU tip off at 7 tonight, pregame at 6:30 on your home for the Jayhawks, North Central Kansas, Z96.3 The Lake. Thoughts on K-State? Back to them for a moment with the, you know, nearly blew it, did actually blow the lead, but then, you know, rallied the ship, and Jerome Tang saying that I felt like we're kind of playing not to lose. And you see that sometimes when you get big leads. We see that, which, for crying out loud, we've seen it happen in Super Bowls. We've seen it in some of the biggest games ever. We saw KU down 15 at halftime North Carolina a few years ago. We've seen Kansas down 9 in a national championship game against Memphis with 2:12 to go and come back and win. And what happens is that clock doesn't go fast enough for you when you have a comfortable lead. And, you know, we even seen it at the high school level. And we've seen the Beloit boys down 12 with 2:22 to go and come back and force overtime. The Blake girls were up 10 with 5 minutes to go, and Minneapolis came back to win. I mean, it is, I don't want to say you play tight, but I think you do check the clock a little bit more often. You're like, man, when is this thing going to be over? We should have this thing done, and we don't. Next thing you know, you look up, momentum changes, and you're in a tussle.
Yeah, I obviously was doing the game, and K-State tipped before we even started, and so I didn't see hardly any of it until the end. But it was like I looked at the score, and it's 22-point lead at half, and then Ryan comes up at the end. He's got it on the phone, mm-hmm. and it's 79-78 West Virginia. I was like, what happened? I had no idea at all what happened. And obviously they hit threes and made a heck of a run. And it's – I was just – You just, you know, for those that are holding on to that last little thread of hope here for the NCAA tournament, I mean, you're just sitting there hoping, well, get it to overtime and he doesn't lose in overtime, right?
No, he doesn't.
That's still holding true at this point. Well, at some point, I'm going to guess K-State's probably going to lose an overtime game as with Jerome Tang as their coach. But, yeah, you do. I think that it's... The most interesting part, I think, for me is, like, you don't see deficits that big, like 25,
yeah,
to where they actually make the comeback and then lead by four. Like, so many times you see a team come back, get to, like, two or four
run
or something
out of
like
gas.
That, and they can't quite get over the hump. Mm-hmm. But, man, they got over the hump, and we're up by four late, and it's like, oh, goodness gracious. And then, you know, Tyler Perry is basically automatic at the end of the game at the free throw line. So that's something that's nice. You kind of get aggravated a little bit. I think you were talking the other day about how sometimes the offense gets a little stagnant and mm-hmm. the ball goes into the ground, and Tyler's one of the tops. I know we talked about Will McNair that on Monday or yesterday, but Tyler Perry does that a lot too, right? Like the ball is just getting – and it, like, where are you going with it, dude? But all those things that I say about Tyler Perry, he makes up for it with clutch threes and is just – automatic at the mm-hmm. free throw line down the stretch. And, and if you're the opponent, you just don't want the ball in his hands to foul him. But that's obviously they're going to get it to him. And so he's good at finishing. He's good in high pressure clutch situations. But during the game, there's sometimes where you're like, what are you doing, dude? And so I think he's been a difference maker for this team in the wins that they've had. You just, hope that this is something, two straight wins here for K-State to get them maybe turned somewhere else mm-hmm. as they head into the Big 12 tournament and maybe get three big wins there if they went out here, and maybe it's going to be enough. But I'm still not overly confident about that part of it, but we'll see how it plays out.
When you have a good point guard who's an excellent foul shooter, you've got a really good chance to win a lot of close games.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly what K-State's done.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at all the overtime games, and Tyler Perry's come up big, and then the Kansas game, he came up with that crazy shot in the lane. I mean, mm-hmm. he made plays, made free throws. He's been doing that all year long, and you know, where would K-State be without Tyler Perry? You know, some people talk about bad shot selection, this or that, but without him, where would you be?
Oh, yeah. It'd be tough. There'd be some games that never made it to overtime.
Might not be any of them made it to overtime. Absolutely. You know, KU tonight without Kevin McCullough, BYU is an interesting matchup for Kansas. And, you know, you're sitting here, I think, as a KU fan going, well, we're supposed to win. But then you start looking at who you have that's going to be playing. Like, are we playing with, you know, are we due to lose one at home? And please don't let it be K-State coming up the next home game on senior night, where we've won like 1,000 in a row on senior night. So, you know, Bill Self said yesterday that Kevin McCullough, if we just wait and play him right for the NCAA tournament, he's not going to be worth a crap. So he's got to play. So basically Bill Self saying if he's going to come back and return this year, he's got to come back by the Big 12 tournaments, how I take that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's only a few weeks away. Interesting. KU and BYU tonight, 6:30 pregame on Z96.3 Lake. Houston, number one in the country. That sometimes has been a curse. They look to stay atop the Big 12 as they are 24-3, 11-3 in the conference. They'll host Cincinnati at 6 o'clock tonight on ESPN2. So they should win since they're at home. But we've seen a lot of ranked teams lose to unranked teams, although mostly on the road. And at 8 o'clock tonight, Texas is on the road at Texas Tech. Royals spring training. If you're into baseball, Bobby Witt Jr. is off to 0-for-3. So, oh no. Gave him all the money and he's already... No, I'm just kidding. But Seth Lugo, who they picked up as a free agent, 2 innings, 1 hit, 1K. Looked pretty good yesterday in the early going. Colt Reagan's looked good the other day. Royals won another shutout, 6-0. The Royals pitching staff is absolutely dominant. Yeah, where have I heard that before? I've also heard the Royals' offense can't be stopped. And then all of a sudden, first four-game series of the season, the Royals get shut out 3 of the 4 games. So, you know, it is spring training, but it is fun if you like baseball, get into it a little bit. And, And we'll see how the Royals do this year. They should be improved. There's no question about that. And the Royals have won three of their first four games in spring training. And let me see if they I would imagine they're probably playing again today. Today is a Tuesday. Yes, they play the Rockies. They play the Rockies at 2:05, and they have a split squad situation. They'll play the Padres at 2:10, and guess what? Michael Wacha is going to start against his old team. His first time as a Royals in spring training is against the Padres.
Nice.
That's interesting. Daniel Lynch going to pitch the game one for the Royals against the Rockies, and then the other game is Wacha versus Darvish. So there you have that. The NFL announced that the official salary cap figure for 2024 will be $255.4 million, which is up from $224.8 million. That's a $31 million increase, which is the largest in free agency history. So this is great news for those guys that are free agents because there's more money to be thrown around. And a couple of those guys that you can point to would be Chris Jones and Legarius Sneed. Now, I think the easy thing to do here is look at this and go, wow, the Chiefs have more money to re-sign these guys. They have more flexibility to keep not one, but both of them. And that may be true. But I think something being overlooked here is every team in the National Football League now has $31 million more dollars per year to spend. So they might be able to offer a bigger deal and go further than they were going to if they coveted Chris Jones or Legarius Sneed. So I think this could go either way. I think most people just stuck on, well, that's more money to keep them. Like Chris Jones could be sitting there going, I want $32 million minimum, okay? Well, somebody said they projected Jones to get 4 years, $120 million. Well, unless almost all that's guaranteed, I don't see that happening. I don't think he's going to take that. I think he wants at least 32 to 35 a year. So let's say that Chris Jones is willing to take 32. And then all of a sudden you see the cap change. Now you're like, well, what's another $3 million? Chiefs, I want 35 now. And then somebody down the road says, I'll give, yeah, you know, I was going to give Chris Jones 32, 33, but got another $31 million. He's hard to find these D tackles that can do what Chris Jones does. I'll go ahead and I might give the guy 37. And then you're priced out. So Chiefs fans are automatically thinking this is a great thing. I think it could be. But I think there's another layer to it, and that is what I just proposed, is that now every team has more money. Now, listen, if this is just the Chiefs, obviously it's a huge advantage. Yeah. But it's not. Everybody in the league gets $31 million more towards the cap. The cap was raised. The ceiling was raised from $224 million to $255 million for this upcoming season. That's an extra $30 million for every franchise to spend if they choose to. And that doesn't mean the Chiefs are going to spend all 30 on Chris Jones and Legarius Sneed. They also would like to improve the wide receiver situation. They don't have a left tackle technically, unless Wanya Morris is going to be that guy. You know, I'm sure they would like to maybe find a tight end eventually to take over for Kelsey. You know, running back McKinnon and Allaire are free agents. So, you know, are they going to address that in the draft? Are they going to get some kind of, you know, a similar guy like Jerick McKinnon with some experience and sign him to a 1 year deal? Like I said, wide receiver they need to address. You know, if you do lose Chris Jones or Legarius Sneed, you got to address those areas. Although they're definitely set in a better situation if they don't re-sign him, they've got enough guys to throw at that situation, in my opinion. But Chris Jones is a whole different animal. But it's just automatic. Chiefs Kingdom's like, all right, we got $31 million. Give Jones 20 of that. Sneed 10. Boom, got it. Doom, doom, boom, 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 boom. Three-peat, here we go. And we got our guys back. Well, there's other free agents as well. Tommy Townsend, it looks like, may not be back because they signed Matt Areza as a punter. There's Mike Dana is a free agent. Willie Gay is a free agent. Drew Tranquil is a free agent. You don't think this extra money helps Drew Tranquil's price? I would guess that helps him a little bit to make more money. I think Tranquil wants to be a Chief. But you know what? All these guys say they want to be a Chief.
Why? But not,
who wouldn't want to be?
Yeah.
But everybody says that. But then when it comes down to, hey, if the Chiefs are offering you 70 cents on the dollar or 80 cents on the dollar or even 90 cents on the dollar, are you taking 10 cents and you're taking a 10% discount to stay with the Kansas City Chiefs, and we're talking with these players, we're talking 10% discount could be, we're talking millions of dollars.
Yeah.
So it is easy for Chris Jones to get up on, you know, a celebration in Kansas City and go, I want to be a Chief. We're gonna be, I'm going to be back next year. Well, Johnny Damon said he wanted to be back, and that what happened there. You know, the Royals have had guys that say they want to be a Royal for their whole life, and they're not. The Chiefs have had guys that, oh, Juju Smith-Schuster said he wanted to be a Chief. He's gone. He took the better deal, right? Because the Chiefs didn't offer him that good of a deal. And I don't blame Juju. I don't blame him at all. Tyreek Hill, if he wanted to be a Chief, he could have been, taking $2 million less per year. He chose he wanted more money. And won the ball even more. So, and now, guess what? He's got some of his teammates, like Mahomes, Kelsey, and Jones, with two more rings than he has, because he departed. Congrats, you got all the money, which was only a couple million more per year. You could have made plenty of money in Kansas City and had a couple more rings, maybe. I don't know. Probably, maybe not, because obviously what the Chiefs got in that trade and that haul to improve their defense. But there's a lot of needs that the Chiefs have, and I think some fans in Chiefs Kingdom just overlook how many free agents they have, and they overlook some of the needs this team has, and they're like, well, we just got to bring Jones and Snead back, and we're going to run it back, and we're going to get a three-peat. It's like, you got other free agents, other positions to address, and there's, you can give them an extra $30 million. Well, that gives everybody else the flexibility the Chiefs have to add $30 million to the payroll, and you still have to address a lot of people. So if Drew Tranquil, the Chiefs say, we'll give you, Drew, we're going to give you an incentive-laden contract, 1 year, $10 million, with the chance to make 15. I'm just making stuff up here. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what his value is. And the Houston Texans say, hey, Drew Tranquil, we'll give you 2 years, and we'll give you $15 million. Or excuse me. The Chiefs have 1 year, $10 million with incentives, and the Texans say, we'll give you two for 20, and it's all guaranteed. What do you think Tranquil should do? I would take guaranteed. The two for 20 and take the guarantee. That's what I would do. Whereas the Chiefs might have, well, you're just going to one for seven when the incentive's up to 10. So there are teams that have way more flexibility than Chiefs do right now.
Oh, yeah.
And there are teams that have less, obviously. But I don't necessarily think this means that, oh, they're going to be able to bring both these guys back.
No, they still have to do. Listen, like you said, there's free agents out there that everybody wants, right? And so, yeah, everybody gets this money, but prices could go up, like you said. But the Chiefs still have to do some other things on the back end here and adjust some stuff just to get themselves to where they want to get other guys too, not just the two that we're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's so much that goes into it here, and so many different guys, like we talked about, you know, shortly after the Super Bowl when we went through and said, hey, do we want this guy, or would he walk, or what would you do with this one? And so the Chiefs have to make all those decisions, and I really feel like they're going to have to, you know, restructure some stuff and do different things to even get to the point where they're talking about re-signing Chris Jones and L'Jarius Sneed, right?
Right.
And I still think there's a possibility that a tag could go on Sneed. I don't know when all that has to be done, but you know, there's ways you can get around some of that, and there's ways you can, and like we've always said, like, you trust in Veach, and that he's got people that understand what the cap's going to do, and they'll understand what it means having $31 million extra to do with it too.
Sure.
So, it's definitely, yeah, that doesn't change my mentality of how I think things are going to go this offseason, just based on having extra money, because I agree with you. I mean, everybody's got extra money, so they might spend more than they should on somebody.
Free agency is always fun to look at, no matter what the sport is, because you go, oh, we could get this guy, or I like this guy, I like that guy. ArrowheadAttic.com got five under the radar free agents that the Chiefs should consider looking at. The first one they've got, wide receiver Kendrick Bourne from New England, who had a pretty solid year with not a good quarterback and not a good offense. He tore his ACL in late October. He's expected to be ready by week one, but due to the injury, he won't be that expensive. He could sign around for $6 to $8 million a year, maybe a 1 or 2 year deal. Okay, that's sounds interesting. Maurice Hurst, the defensive tackle. And whether you have Chris Jones or not, the Chiefs are going to lose Derek Nnadi, it looks like, as a free agent. So he's a guy that he played well for the Niners, and then he was with the Browns, had a pectoral injury in week 14, and he could be a cheaper option at a defensive tackle. Marcus Davenport had a season ended prematurely due to injuries, a defensive end with the Saints. So maybe he's a guy that the Chiefs should consider. Offensive tackle, if you don't trust Wanya Morris to be your left tackle, and if Donovan Smith doesn't return, Josh Jones, offensive tackle. Don't know much about him. He was with Arizona in 2022, and it'd be a cheaper option or insurance. And then if you're looking at a veteran running back, as I mentioned earlier, you know, Jerry McKinnon, if you think he's pretty much out of gas, there's Antonio Gibson of Washington, who can catch the ball in the backfield. He has had some fumble problems, though, 13 fumbles since 2020. So that would be a big issue, obviously. But there is a guy. So what they did was, instead of pointing to the obvious ones, oh, let's go get Calvin Ridley and T. Higgins and Michael Pittman. Let's get them all, you know. They're saying, here's some guys that are cheaper options that may, well, you know, look what the Chiefs did when Tyreek Hill was traded. They went with Justin Watson, cheaper option. MVS, you know, was a middle-of-the-road option. Juju Smith-Schuster, they got him on a cheaper deal and laced it with incentives. So, you know, that could, I think that's the Chiefs' route, is they're going to find, they're going to try to be thrifty with their money and get more than just signing some. Like, I just don't see any way or how they're going to sign a free agency and give a big, because it's going to take a big deal to get Calvin Ridley. It's going to take a big deal to get T. Higgins, who has been franchise tagged by the Bengals, by the way. So they'd have to work out a trade or something.
Cross T. Higgins off the list. They're not wasting the money to trade for T. Higgins.
I've never felt that was ever an option.
There was a slim hope of it at all,
right?
It's off the list.
Yeah. You know, Michael Pittman is going to require a lot of money. He's a young receiver out of Ohio State that's at with the Colts. And so some of the top-tier free agent wide receivers, I just don't think the Chiefs are going to be in on. But there are other guys that might be out there. DeAndre Hopkins, once again, if the Titans release him, okay, if they release him, which is possible, now he would be back on the radar again. It would be a second straight offseason. We're talking about DeAndre Hopkins, who had a pretty decent year last year. Taller receiver, so forth and so on. And we mentioned Hunter Renfrow is a guy that is coming off not a good year with the Raiders, but there's a possession receiver that, you know, if Sky Moore isn't going to be that guy, then Hunter Renfrow might slide in and be able to do something for you for a year or two. So I think the Chiefs, what they'll do is they're definitely going to be active in free agency, and they're going to find, well, just look at this year. Two of their best signings during this offseason were under-the-radar moves. Drew Tranquil, when they didn't have a starting linebacker position available, so he was insurance, which, boy, thank God they did that. And Charles Omenihu, who was suspended for 6 games of the year but came on and played great the last half of the season and helped Chris Jones and freed him up a little bit. Those are two guys that we didn't know much about prior to last offseason that were huge components of the Chiefs getting to or winning the Super Bowl. So did those guys cost multi-year deals, tons of guaranteed money? But yet they were shrewd moves, weren't they? And Justin Reed was a great pickup a couple years ago to replace Tyrann Mathieu. Did they have to spend more on him than, say, Tranquil and Omenihu? Yes, they did. But Justin Reed was a very younger player with a lot still potential, was a solid player already, established player. They got younger and paid the same price as if they would have kept the Honey Badger. So these type of moves are what the Chiefs typically do. And they walk from Tyreek Hill, and that's what the Patriots did. They knew when to walk from guys. That's why I still think the Chiefs, I don't know. I still have some doubts on whether the Chris Jones and the Chiefs are going to work something out. The Jarius Sneed, I think the Chiefs can they tag him, have him for one more year if they feel it's necessary. But I think the Chiefs are comfortable enough with what they've done in the secondary that they could let Sneed walk, and that frees them up to do some other things they want to address, like perhaps wide receiver.
The Tranquil move that you talked about with guys that we didn't know much about, like I didn't know much about Omenihu at all, right? Like,
yeah.
But Tranquil you do because you see him two times a year.
And
right?
I thought
he started
player.
Every game for the Chargers, so the move didn't make sense to me. It made sense from a Chiefs end, but from a Tranquil end, it's like, why are you taking that little of money after starting every single game with the Chargers?
Right.
And you're coming into a role where you're not going to be a projected starter, but he wanted it that bad, I think, to be part of a Super Bowl winning team, that he took less money and understood going into the year that I'm not going to start right away.
Right.
And then came up huge because they had injuries to both of the linebackers in the middle, and Nick Bolton and Willie Gay, and he had to start a lot and had to play a lot and had to be a huge factor with this team on defense. And I think his veteran steady presence in there was you can't even measure what all that means, right? In true form, and so it was huge. And if you can get guys like that, that's what makes you a championship caliber team.
Yeah.
Finding guys that can fill in spots that are going to overachieve because you got other guys that are attracting so much focus, especially defensively, when you got to take care of Chris Jones, you got to take care of the dominant players, and it frees stuff up for other guys. And, and you see it with Karloftis. You saw it with Tranquil doing some big things. Amenihue, obviously. And so, yeah, I mean, go get guys like that that you don't, you're not going to break the bank spending money on them, but you know that they've been productive at times in this league and in a defense that is top to bottom, one of the best, can thrive. And so that's what you got to look for, right? I'm not. I haven't for probably the last two or three years been on any kind of train of we got to go get big name guys in free agency. You just don't need to do it. You've won three out of four Super Bowls, not really doing that.
Right, right. And that's why I wasn't on the D-Hop train that some people said they had to have him. And what do you know? We were right all along that we didn't have to have him. Would it be nice? That'd be a luxury. It'd be nice to have a whole bunch of people. But when you look at the Chiefs, when they. You know, they've been smart in free agency, but they also always have a plan. They draft for guys that are going to be – usually whoever they draft is going to be in a position where they have a important free agent to be, which Mike Dana is one of those with the Chiefs on defensive line, and so they drafted Felix out of Kansas State. But they I don't – you know, first of all, the top 10 free agent wide receivers, according to Yahoo Sports, they got T. Higgins number one, which, no, that's not going to happen. Mike Evans, it looks like he might re-sign with Tampa. That's going to cost you too much. Michael Pittman. Pittman Jr., like I said, he had 109 catches, 1,152 yards, and he gets with a great quarterback. Good luck with that. He ain't going to afford him. Calvin Ridley is one that I don't know how much he's going to cost, but you know, that's a guy I kind of like, but I think he's going to cost too much. Marquise Brown, unless he's cheap, I'm not interested. He's usually hurt. Darnell Mooney of the Bears, I'm not big on him. Here's one that's interesting. Gabe Davis of the Bills. He definitely hurt the Chiefs many times. He was hurt a lot last year. Tyler Boyd of the Bengals, I mean, that's a guy. If they pony up, they tag Higgins or they work out a long-term deal with Higgins. They got Jamar Chase. They got Burrow with a lot of money. They got money on open on the cap, but I don't think the Bengals want to spend a ton of money all at one position group with wide receiver. Tyler Boyd might be an option. KJ Osborne, Minnesota, decent player. And then, of course, there's always the OBJ one that everybody wants to bring up. And Robert Griffin now has said, oh, the Chiefs are going to get OBJ. Stop. I don't want OBJ. I don't need him. I mean, if I get him for cheap and the Chiefs feel that's the way it goes, and that's fine. I'll and Beach, I trust. But I would rather see the Chiefs do something and avoid most of those guys on that list. There's a few that are intriguing to me. Gabe Davis, but I don't know about his health. He's intriguing to me. Calvin Ridley is very intriguing to me. But odds are they're not going to get these high-profile wide receivers. Who knows? What they might do is draft another Rashee Rice in the second round, and that'll be pretty good, wouldn't it? Give me two Rashee Rices, Travis Kelce, and throw in a Justin Watson and a Hunter Renfrow or a Tyler Lockett. See, Tyler Lockett's one that's one I would love to see in Kansas City. There's a guy that, you know, I think you could afford to go get on a 1 or 2 year deal. The question is, what will he be on the open market? Have they released him yet? I don't think
no.
They have
and
yet.
That's you know, that list doesn't include guys
are going to get cut,
casualties
like
D-Hop or Tyler Lockett, right? So, I think the guys on that list that I don't know that the Chiefs are really looking at anyway. But even if you are, I think you wait it out. And you see, you know, maybe we can get a Tyler Lockett or somebody like that that's a veteran that, that we can trust or we can get. Somehow D-Hop does get cut and we get a great deal because he wants to win a Super Bowl. And so
D-Hop, by the way, 75 catches, 1,057 yards, 7 touchdowns, 14 yards per reception. Those are all good numbers. And his quarterbacks were Ryan Tannehill and Will Levis.
Yeah. And I never doubted that he could probably still have it. Yeah. But it was like you don't spend the money that it's going to take to trade for him or to sign him.
Right.
Either way, whichever way it takes to do it. And I think that holds true this offseason if he gets cut and the Titans don't want to keep him around. I mean, all that holds true still. You're not breaking the bank for DeAndre Hopkins because you don't need to. I just can't go through another offseason with everybody talking about a wide receiver position. I can't do it. Like it's just like, let's move on. There's three out of four Super Bowls here, and two of them have not had what you call a number one wide receiver in this league.
Right.
And this year wasn't even close to anybody that had that. You could at least, you know, argue that at a time maybe Juju could have been that caliber of player. But this past year, nobody's that caliber of your definition. I say your as the you know, accepted definition of a number one wide receiver, not counting Travis Kelce.
Austin Eckler, it looks like, is going to probably be available. Not his price is probably too tall, too high. Yeah. But there's a guy that'd be perfect for
I would love
Chiefs.
Austin Eckler and Andy Reid's system. Oh, no doubt about that.
Austin Eckler would be perfect. See, I'm dreaming now. I'm now suddenly like Chiefs fans wanting T. Higgins. You know, DeAndre Swift would be all right, although he's been injury prone a little bit. I'm seeing a few other, you know, looking at some running backs. You know, yeah, no, I wouldn't do that one. And Devin Singletary of the Texans would be a cheaper option, maybe. He's a guy that can catch and run. See, I'm looking for a guy that can catch the ball and run. I don't want an A.J. Dillon.
Well, you have to have one. Know. You know, I mean, that's
in that offense,
who the Chiefs are, right?
You like, got to be able to catch that.
Jarek McKinnon was known before he even came to Kansas City as being a guy that could catch the ball out of the backfield.
Well, they drafted.
He had like six straight weeks last year where he had a touchdown reception?
Well, and they drafted Allaire, and at LSU, he caught the ball a lot from Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
And he's had a couple of outstanding catches in the end zone for touchdowns, one that we saw this year. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know, Saquon Barkley, Josh Jacobs, some of these guys are going to be available more than likely. And Derrick Henry's a free agent, but that doesn't fit what the Chiefs want to do in my opinion.
No.
At all. So there's lots of notable names out there, but will the increase in the salary cap from 224 to 255, a $31 million increase, does it help the Chiefs' chances of keeping Jones and Snead? On paper, financially, it does, but keep in mind, every team in the league has that extra money, which means they might actually offer more to a Drew Tranquil or to a Willie Gay or to a Tommy Townsend or to a Mike Dana or to a Chris Jones or LeJarius Snead to where it goes too high, and you got to bow out like you did with Tyreek Hill.
Yep.